Thank you, sir. Happy Sabbath, everyone. I trust everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Since you live in the United States of America, you probably ate way too much. We did, for sure. Actually, we ate an amazing amount of food. That's what I'm going to talk about today is Thanksgiving, kind of. My message is geared towards Thanksgiving. The title of my message is Blessings, comma, A Matter of Perspective. Blessings, comma, A Matter of Perspective. In this country, we have so many things to be thankful for, so many blessings. We have just overabundance of wealth compared to most of the world. Can you hear me now? So many blessings. So many rich. We're just filthy rich as a country compared to most of the world. I want to read, if you would, turn to Psalm 100. Psalm 100. Starting in verse 1. Psalm 100, verse 1. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into the gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name. For the Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting and his truth endures to all generations. The start of the first verse says, make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. My margin says everywhere in the world, all the earth. I've never been to all the earth. I've seen documentaries and things on television about India, Africa, China. There are places in India where you've all seen it where I've never been there, like I said, but you know, it's just like big, huge, massive areas where it's just like tin roofs and little alleyways where people are walking through. And it's just for us to see that, to the thought of living in those conditions is just kind of blows our mind. We have no idea what that's like. China, the same thing. There's many, many people there in China as well. And there's just areas like that that we just can't imagine living in that kind of thing where we don't have the abundance that we have here. Mexico, the poverty rate in Mexico is around 50% usually. I'm pretty sure that's what it is right now. I have, however, been to Mexico. And I have a story I want to share with you guys about some time I spent in Mexico that changed my perspective on my blessings and my life. It was 1994. I'm pretty sure it was summer. It was summer of 1994. It was one of the first NAFTA projects. At that time, I was installing pallet rack and conveyors inside of warehouses, the big storage racks. Well, we had a job in Cuernavaca, Mexico, which is about an hour outside of Mexico City. It was Baxter's medical supply company, big rack job. And like I said, it was one of the first NAFTA projects. So for whatever reason, W.T. Villard, which was the material house we were working for, they were dumping a bunch of money. I mean, they were just throwing money at the job. So when I got there, I flew into Mexico City. I was greeted by a chauffeur. He was driving a big black Suburban, and which was weird because, you know, I used to fly all over the country with my toolbox and my suitcase and do jobs everywhere, but I would just go rent a car and go do my job. Well, this one, I had my toolbox in one hand, my suitcase in the other hand, and here's a chauffeur, big black Suburban, and a guy in a suit picks me up, has a sign that says Jim Simpkins. I'm like, cool, man. So I get in there, and this guy's job was to take me around because they were real worried about this job because of the fact, like I said, it's a NAFTA. It was one of the first NAFTA projects. I'm American. There was a Canadian guy with us. We're in Mexico. They're not knowing how this is all going to go. They've never done any real work in Mexico. So this guy's job was to take me around, introduce me to people, introduce me to all the people at Baxter's, you know, get my temporary employees set up. So he helped me find a temporary service down there where I'd be able to use, helped me find my hotel. Where I get to my hotel was the Villa Bejar, the Villa Bejar in English, but Villa Bejar is $140 a night hotel. Spectacular place. It's like we're all the dignitaries and stuff. And this was a dump room that we were in, $140 a night, but it was nice. It was while we were there, we'd see all, you know, these big limos pull up with Mexican flags on them. Like the president of Mexico would stay there when he was in town. And when Julio Cesar Chavez, the boxer, I was there when he lost his first fight. He stayed at that hotel. Anyway, it's just that kind of place, like this really, really awesome place. But this guy that I'm driving around with is explaining to me how Mexico works and kind of just telling me what to look out for and what to be careful of and whatever. He was explaining to me that I'm American, so everyone's going to expect me to have money. So to be really careful about, he said, there's no reason to tip people a lot. Everybody wants a tip from me, but there's no reason to tip them a lot. Just give them a little bit and move on. And that he explained to me at that time, the minimum wage in Mexico was $10 a week. I'm like, $10 a week? And at the time, it's still not hitting home with me, everything that he's telling me. I'm just absorbing all of it. $10 a week. I'm staying in a hotel room that's $140 a night. I'm getting up because of the deal they made with me. I'm getting $100 a day per diem. And plus my wage. And I made pretty good money at the time. So $10 a week. So he's driving around. Go get me forklifts. I'm all over Mexico. Going and talking to all, and I'm noticing that we're driving around and there's just poor areas everywhere. Then you get through them and then you just see like spots of, like just structures, you know? There's just structures. It's kind of weird how it's set up. But a lot of dirt roads, a lot of obvious poverty, a lot of ugly dogs everywhere and stuff like that. It was obvious there was a lot of people that didn't have much. But again, I'm not dwelling on it. I'm just absorbing everything. He takes me to his house, this chauffeur of mine. I guess he and his brothers, when this whole NAFTA thing started, they foresaw that there was going to be a lot of Americans coming to Mexico and Canadians coming to Mexico. So they went out and they bought 5 Suburbans and started their little business, chauffeur business. We pull up to this place in the middle of all these dirt roads and these little, like, just poor people everywhere. This big 12-foot rock wall. I mean, I don't even know, 300 or 400 feet long on each side, big square, 12-foot tall rock wall. You go around the side and there's a little guard shack there with an arm, you know, one of those little red and white arms. We pull up there. Guy comes out with a machine gun, opens the thing up. We drive inside. He closes it back down. Immediately, 2 guys come running out with little buckets and towels and wash the Suburban. So every time you pull into that place with any of the 5 Suburbans pull in there, these 2 little guys run out and wash the, cause you're on dirt roads. I mean, they just run out and wash this thing. When they're done, spotless again. Okay. Absorbing all of this. $10 a week. This big, huge palace that this guy lives in. I met his dad. He's like in this big dark room at the end of this big long table. He's smoking a cigar and drinking brandy. And it's kind of dark and he's older. He's kind of chubby and he's bald. And all of them speak English because they're rich. That I found that out too. And he stands up and he walks over to me really slow. And I go to shake his hand and he grabs my shoulders and kisses me on each cheek. And I'm like, man, it's weird, like the mafia movie. So I go outside and I notice at the back of their property against the big 12-foot rock wall are these little lean-to, like it's like little tin roofs with little posts. And then these little ring, like little rock things, like little you'd have for a burn pile, but small little rock rings where you have fires and whatever and little grates on them absorbing all of this. So I finally get all my stuff together. I was there a whole week getting everything lined up. That's a big long, that would make this story unbearably long. So we get everything lined up. The following Monday, I meet my temporary employees. I have 25 men. My 25 men were between the ages of 13 and 18. And I mean, they're just little old dudes, most of them, but they were between 13 and 18 years old. And I didn't care. I was only 24. I wasn't much more than a kid myself. So I'm like, let's get it on. You know, I taught them how to, I mean, they never seen a rack in their life. They never, you know what I mean? A forklift. Are you kidding me? So I taught them how to put up rack. I worked those kids like dogs that first week. Worked like dogs. They worked hard. In Mexico, in that area of Mexico, people work 50 hours a week. That's just a normal work week. You work 50 hours. And they work a half day on Saturday. And during that, in that time, I wasn't obviously going to church. So, you know, I was there on Saturday. So that first Saturday rolls up after, I'm telling you, we worked them like dogs. Guy walked, these two guys come up, one of them with a gun on his hip and the other one with a briefcase. And it's payday. They whoop, open this briefcase. It's got cash in it. They pay all these kids cash. They're all happy, you know, whatever. They get their money and they disappear. So these guys hand me the invoice because I had to approve the hours each week so they could get paid. So I grab it and I'm going over it and I'm looking where the guys' names, they're listed on there and how much they got paid and, you know, 50 hours a man. It's all totaled at the bottom. It said 50 hours. It didn't have any dollar signs. It said 12.50. Get out on the bottom, had the hours total, and then 11.00, and the total was like, I don't know, somewhere around $14,000. There's a lot of numbers, and I really didn't care in my heart at the time until it's starting to like really hit me. I'm like, what is this 12.50 here? Well, that's what they make a week. $12.50. They make, I just worked on those kids like animals for $12.50 for 50 hours. They made a quarter an hour. And we were paying $11 an hour for each of them per man. So these guys are making 14 grand a week and they're only paying out less than 400. I'm like, dude, look, I'm not trying to change your whole structure of your country, but you either pay them a dollar an hour or I'm going to get somebody else. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. People don't make that kind of money here. I was like, well, these ones are. While I'm here, these kids are going to make $12 an hour or I will get somebody else. I promise you. So they're all mad and they left. We worked the next week, y'all. And this is what I'm telling you. These kids, as far as they knew, they were still making a quarter an hour and they were the hardest workers I had in my whole 18 years of putting up rack. And you know, we're getting closer and closer. You know what I mean? Because when you do construction work, it's like teamwork. It's like playing basketball or football. I mean, you're working in unison. It's a team project and every man has to go together. So you're automatically getting closer and closer to each other. Comes to that next Saturday. Dude rolls up. The guys roll up. One man with a gun, one man with a briefcase. Pulls it out. He handed every one of those kids in pesos $50. And y'all, I'm telling you, you never seen anything like it. They're just, they're talking so fast and so, I speak decent Spanish and back then I spoke pretty good Spanish. I can understand a word they're saying. It was all happening so fast. And then the other guys there, yeah. And I had one of my guys from home was a Mexican guy. So he absorbed all of this and they took off and then he explained to me what just happened. The bosses told him that the white boy, me, gave him a raise, but not to expect that after I was gone. It was going to be back to normal after I was gone. So the next Monday when they showed up, mind you, like I'm saying, at that time I was making probably $1,000 a week and I was getting paid $500, $600, $700 a week in per diem because I was making $100 a day, 7 days a week. These kids were making $50 a week to work for 50 hours. In those 50 hours, they were working like grown men, I promise you. That Monday, they would not leave me alone. They were going to take me to lunch. They wanted me to go to their house and let me buy them a beer and all this stuff. Let them buy me a beer. I'm like, y'all, that's not necessary. Let's just go to work. You guys earned it. Let's go, you know. So we worked for another week and they worked in such a way where it would make anyone proud to watch it. You couldn't have watched what we were doing and not just been like, wow. It was that awesome the way they worked. They listened to my every word. They did everything exactly the way I asked them for $50 a week. That Saturday, they got paid. They would not leave me alone. And like I said, we were getting closer and closer. You know what I mean? We're getting tighter and tighter knit as things go along. So after they got paid, they wouldn't leave me alone. I'm like, okay, buy me a beer. Again, they're 13 to 18 years old. I'm just reminding you that. So these 13 to 18 year old boys take me over to this kid Angel's house, who lives literally 200 yards down the street. I didn't know that, but anyway, he lives 200 yards down the street. So we go over to this place, and there's like a building, one of the few buildings that you see around in the dirt roads, and there's a fence around the whole back. We go in the back fence, and two of the kids run off. You know, they take each other's money, two of them disappear. We go inside, and there's a little dirt lot with a lean-to against, you know, a little tin roof with two sticks and a little closed-off part with some plywood or something and a little rock fire ring with a grate on top. And then there's over here, there's like little buckets and junk that we all went over there and we sat on these. I'm absorbing all this again. I've seen these lean-tos before. They were at my chauffeur's house. So I'm like, okay. Kids come back with the beers. So here I am sitting on a bucket, 24-year-old American sitting on a bucket drinking beers with 13-year-olds. Whatever. It really happened. No, it's just a true story. So we start talking. I spent hours there. We start talking. This is where Angel and his family live. Angel was my little guy, the only one out of all of them that spoke any English at all. So he spoke pretty good broken English. I spoke pretty good broken Spanish, so he was my go-to guy. So they start talking about, and I asked him, how come you speak English? He says, well, they taught me at school. I was like, oh, cool, you go to school? I said, I heard that there's no public school in Mexico. He says, yeah, there isn't. So he goes on to tell me that since he was 5 years old, he's been working 1 year and then going to school 1 year and then working 1 year and going to school 1 year. This kid's like 15 or 16. He's getting after this particular year, this was his year to work. The next year he's going to go to school and he's going to enter fourth grade because he's working 1 year and going to school 1 year, but he can read. He can speak English. And let me just tell you, he's one of the happiest people I've ever met. So somewhere in there, you know, we're there for a while. This lady comes out with four little kids. And he had also told me that his older sister was doing the same thing he was doing. So she was off. That was her year to go to school. So she was at school that year. Anyway, so this lady comes with these four little kids. Two of them are in diapers. All of them are kind of dirty. I mean, they live in a dirt field and behind a house. Those little kids, the two in the diapers, they ran up to Angel, who's just their big brother, and almost tackled him. Just, they have a dad, but that's their brother, the one that teaches them how to read and teaches them how to speak English and provides for a percentage of their food, whatever. So, I mean, they just couldn't, the family unit is what I'm trying to get at, was so tight and so happy. They were just, as soon as they saw their brother, they just attacked him. And then the other ones made it over there and attacked him like he was a superhero. And all of them just laughing and whatever. Introduces me to his mom. His mom worked for the people in the building. She cleaned the building. And for that, she got her minimum wage and the right to live behind their house in a little dirt field. So they had free place to live and she worked there. This lady, again, the situation I just described to you, she could not have been more thankful or gracious or awesome, wonderful human being. Just hugged me, just smiles all over her. My buddy was having to translate because she's just going on and on about how great it was to meet me and all this stuff. She sat there, her little fire ring there, and there was, you know, there's 20 of us there. She started whooping up fresh tortillas. The little 5-year-old, okay, is running over there helping his mom whoop up this big old stack of tortillas. They whoop out like that. I'm like, man. And then the whole time she's whooping up this other meat stuff. It was, not gonna lie, it was probably pork, but it was good now. So we sat there and all of us at these people's house who live behind somebody else's house in a dirt field are eating our fill and drinking beer with children. But it opened my eyes to the world around me in an instant. That little powwow on buckets in a dirt field with some little kids changed the way I see everything. If I would have tried to tell them that they were poor, they would have laughed me out of that place. They weren't poor. They had it. They knew what it meant to want for sure, but they sure enough knew what it meant to work. And on the edge, they got their lean-to thing, right? With their post and their little fire ring. You look inside of there. They had their rosary on the wall and their cross and their little picture of Mary. You know what I mean? I'm not a Catholic. Don't get me wrong, but they were, and they were proud of it, and they were thankful for it. You know what I'm saying? They had nothing and didn't even know it. They were some of the happiest people I ever met. Everybody in the world is supposed to be thankful, no matter what we have. No matter what we think we don't have. We here in the United States, we're so spoiled, we don't even... If you've never spent any time anywhere else or been around anybody that literally, in our estimation, has nothing, the minimum wage in Mexico right now, in 2018, the minimum wage in Mexico is $1,222 a year. That's $23.50 a day. A week, $4.70 a day. It's crazy. But there's a percentage of them that know nothing else, and they're happy. They're thankful. They say thank you to God every single day for their $23.50. I wouldn't get out of my bed for $23. Their dad, those kids' dad, he worked 10 kilometers from their house. They had no car. They couldn't afford a car. Way less than 50% of people in Mexico have cars. He worked 10 kilometers. That's around 6 miles. So every morning he would get his lunch and he would walk 6 miles. He would work 10 hours and then he would turn around and walk 6 miles back and sleep in the dirt field under a lean-to. And I almost guarantee you that he was just as happy. There's no way his kids were like that and his wife was like that. If he wasn't, I don't guess. I mean, I just assume in my mind, in my fantasies in my mind about their dad, that he was just an awesome guy that taught those kids to be thankful. The middle of this Psalm 100, know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who made us and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. For some reason, when I was preparing this message, the story of Job kept popping in my mind. I'm like, what in the world? Why is that? It wouldn't get out of my mind. So I went and read Job really quick. And when I got about halfway through, I was like, oh, I think I'm starting to feel it. By the time I got all the way to the end, I was like, oh, I got this. I mean, it makes sense. But it just wouldn't get out of my mind. We all know that God called Job a righteous man. God said it. He said, and then he said, what about my servant Job? So God says that Job's a righteous man in his generation and then tells Satan to go try him. Just don't kill him. Do whatever you want. Just don't kill him. Now, my perspective in this human flesh right now is like, that seems a little rough. Seems a lot rough, actually. From this perspective, from my perspective, it's when you're reading it, you're like, man, that seems kind of tough. And then, you know, Job's whole family was killed. All of his riches were taken. He was outcast. It was boils all over his body, sick, outcast. Let's turn over to Job 42. Because even after all of that, everything he went through, you know, he was questioning God and asking God why and trying to figure out what was going on. Cause he thought it was kind of crazy. Just like me, when you think about it from human perspective, it's like, man, this is seems rough. You got a raw deal here. But then you get to the end of Job. Then Job answered the Lord and said, Job 42 verse 1, I know that you can do everything and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You asked, who is this who hides counsel within knowledge, without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I will question you and you shall answer me. Verse 5, I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. At that point, Job was saying that he finally saw who God was and he saw who he was. Job saw who Job was, compared himself to God, and remember that he is nothing. We are nothing without God. Our trials, all the trials that he went through, all any trials that we go through, we're all going through them right now. Our country's going through them right now. Anything that we're going through, God's in control of it. He creates the good days. He creates the bad days. He gets us through it, and he does it for his purpose. And then in the end of Job 42, it says that, let's just go down to Job 42 verse 12. Now the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginnings, for he had 14,000 sheep, 16,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, 1,000 female donkeys. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he called the name of them first. Let's just skip down to 15. In all the land were found no women so beautiful as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers. After this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and grandchildren for 4 generations. So Job died old and full of days. After all that was done to Job, God restored Job, restored the riches of Job, restored his life, restored everything, and then some. This points to me the plan of God. No matter what our trials are, they're not going to probably be as bad as Job's. They're just, I mean, goodness. God has a plan. We know the plan, no matter what the trials are. We have people in this country right now, the city, the Paradise, California, that big fire in Paradise, in Northern California, the town of Paradise, the entire 97% of the structures in Paradise, California were destroyed. There's almost 30,000 people there. If you let it be, that's just a number. 30,000, that's a lot of people, for sure. All the homes, nearly every single home of 30,000 people. Searcy, Arkansas, right now, you guys know where Searcy, most of you probably been to Searcy. You know how big it is. There's only 24,000 people there. All the homes are gone. Wrap your head around that for a minute. You're talking about trials. You're talking about everybody in this room. I'm looking at your faces. We all have them. I know we know each other's stories. We are going through trials. This whole world is going through trials. No matter what, there's nowhere in the Bible where it doesn't remind us to be thankful. And there is nowhere in the Bible where it says, be thankful when everything's awesome and good. Go ahead and mope around right now because I know you're having a rough time. Nowhere does it say that. So the book of Job, the thing that's popping out of my mind is, right now is we're supposed to be thankful. Always supposed to be thankful. This time of year, Thanksgiving points our minds back to being thankful. We have to always be thankful for everything, no matter what, no matter how hard it is, no matter how bad it is. There's always people somewhere with worse things going on, with bigger trials going on, with less money, with no ability for healthcare, period. I mean, they're sick. They're going to die. They cannot afford it. They will die. Right here, now the average lifespan in the United States is over 70, but that's because we have good health care. And most of us can kind of somewhat afford to go, not really, we can't, that's a lie. We can't really, it's getting really expensive to go, but anyway, we have good health care here, so we can live longer. Other people in the world, they can't afford to go to the doctor. They get sick, they die. Thankful anyway. Period. No matter how low we go to the point of Job, we have got to remain thankful anyway. Part of being thankful, I believe, is noticing all the things around it. Noticing the people that are going through trials that are worse than ours. Noticing them and praying for them. Those people, that stuff that's going on in California, man, if you just let it be a number in your mind, it's not fair. You have to really think of it and really pray for them because it is tragedy. If you can imagine the whole town of Searcy just being squished. I can't quite wrap my head around it. They show pictures of it, but the pictures, I guarantee you the pictures can't. The pictures make you a little bit sick in your stomach, make you feel sad. But when you start thinking like, and really trying to put the number and the physical damage to it, a town bigger than Searcy, Arkansas, squished to nothing. It's crazy. We need to, if we're being thankful, and a lot of them are being thankful right now, I guarantee it. If it's just part of being thankful is noticing all of that, noticing the fact that we don't live in India. We don't live in China. We don't live in Mexico. We're not trying to get over here from Honduras in some crazy caravan. Those people though, there is struggle there. Noticing that, praying for them, and recognizing how good we actually have it. That kid, Angel, he was going into fourth grade. He should have been, if he was over here, he would have been a great student. He would have been going into his junior year probably in high school for free. I had just gotten out of high school 6 years before that, dropped out of college 5 years before that. And every single one of my report, listen to me, every report card I ever got in my entire life said, James is a good student, but he... He doesn't apply himself. Wow, listen, every single report card I've ever had said it, and I can't even remember it. That's how good of a student I was. A great student doesn't apply himself. Great student doesn't do his homework. Great student doesn't do this, doesn't do something, because I was not grateful for the education that I was handed for free. Crazy. Go other places and your perspective may change. Our perspective, if we had to live in Job's shoes for a minute, our perspective would obviously be changed for a minute. If our home was, our whole community was destroyed, our perspective would change a little bit. We have to allow our perspective to be changed even though we're not going through those things. And we have to appreciate what we have and appreciate our great God enough to pray to him to help all those people. Got a little bit sidetracked. The end of Psalms 100. Psalms 100 verse 5 says, "For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations." The thing that I am most grateful for, other than the blood of Christ who came and died for to pay my death penalty for me, other than the one thing that I'm most grateful for is God's truth. The truth of the plan. Knowing that the way the plan, knowing how the story ends. If at any low point in our lives, I do not care what is going on, we as God's people, if we cannot look to the future and say, we have got a lot to be thankful for. We were called out of this world and we know how the story ends. We know that God has a purpose. We understand the book of Job. where it seems from different perspectives seems a little bit unfair, but we know in the end, all things will be restored and made new. There's no question about it. We're not wandering around hoping that the Sunday school teachers were right, that if I die tomorrow, I'm going to go to heaven and hopefully I don't go to hell. We know that's not happened. We know how it ends. That, brethren, is an absolutely amazing gift to each of us here. And we have to remember that at all times. Let's go just to close. We're going to go read Colossians 3. Colossians 3, verse 15. Colossians 3, starting in verse 15. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalm and hymn and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Brethren, every single day, all year long, let's be thankful. Not just for Thanksgiving week when we're full of turkey, which is pretty wonderful in itself. Thankful. Thankful for all the blessings that we have. Thankful for all the trials that we have, because it pushes us to being the people that we need to be. And thankful for Christ and what he did for us, and thankful for the fact that we know the plan we were given, the truth which endures forever.